Welcome to Food for Thought, the place to explore, celebrate, and manifest a life motivated and defined by unconditional compassion and optimal wellness. My name is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau, and I'm your host. My work is dedicated to empowering people to live according to their own values of compassion and wellness. You can learn more about who I am and what I do by visiting my website, ColleenPatrickGaudreau.com or JoyfulVegan.com. Today's topic is cat cafes, helpful or harmful. And today's podcast is brought to you by the listeners of this podcast, and that means you. Thank you for valuing this podcast by supporting it at patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau. And check out the current goal you can help me reach. We're still trying to reach that first goal to continue working for you and for the animals. And if you're in the Seattle, Washington area, I've mentioned I will be in Port Townsend speaking on March 13th about the joys and benefits of living vegan. So please bring friends and save the date. We've got a save the date announcement for the weekend of our celebration, compassion, immersion, retreat, weekend with CPG, whatever you want to call it. I'm finalizing the details and I cannot wait to share with you what they are. But if you would like to celebrate and immerse yourself into what it means to live compassionately and surround yourself with compassionate people and other podcast listeners, please save the date. We will be having our celebration in Oakland, California, Memorial Day weekend, which is May 27th through the 29th. And it's going to be a good time to travel because a lot of people have off on that Monday on Memorial Day, May 30th, which is one of the reasons I've picked that weekend. I'm so excited. I hope you can make it to this love fest. It is going to be very special. And I think the first of many, but this is going to be our premier event and it's never going to be like this again. So make sure you're following me on social media. And you're on my mailing list at joyfulvegan.com to learn about the details. And on social media, I am asking your thoughts about what you'd like to see. So make sure you connect with me over there. But as I said, today we're going to discuss cat cafes, which have become very popular. They're very trendy these days all around the world. The first time I had ever heard of cat cafes was when Cat Town was opening theirs here in Oakland, California. And Cat Town is a nonprofit organization here in my lovely city dedicated to helping the most vulnerable shelter cats. They were founded in 2011 and their success has been unbelievable. Now, when the founder, Anne Dunn, and I'm going to tell you an awesome story about Anne in a minute, started volunteering at the Oakland Animal Shelter, which is our municipal shelter, our city shelter, she saw what so many of us see who volunteer with animals in shelters, that many cats are afraid to death in the cages, particularly those who are already shy or senior, and they then appear unadoptable. And when an animal is deemed unadoptable, they're euthanized, they're killed, to make room for those homeless animals who could be placed into homes. Now, Oakland Municipal Shelter is not a no-kill shelter, as you can tell, and it, as the city shelter, has a lot to contend with. Luckily, there are no-kill shelters in Oakland, and many cat rescues who pull out the adoptable cats, and this goes for dogs too, thus adopting them out to homes through their organizations, and then they can call themselves no-kill. This is one of those really interesting things about this whole no-kill movement is that someone is taking care of those animals who, for one reason or another, and it shouldn't be because they're deemed unadoptable, and we'll talk more about that another time, but there are circumstances where animals do need to be euthanized. I mean, some are so badly injured and they do need to be put out of their pain and suffering because they've been hit by a car and they can't be healed. I mean, there are circumstances under which some animals are euthanized, and you know, it's the city shelters, it's these kinds of municipal shelters that tend to take care of these kind of gray areas, put it that way. And then you have all these other rescue organizations who can call themselves no kill. But there are circumstances in which municipal city shelters have to take care of animals who are homeless or injured or just dumped there. And there's a lot of messiness around homeless animals. And there are some amazing people working to improve things in many shelters. Certainly in Oakland, there are some wonderful people working to improve things over at the Oakland City Shelter. And I'm really heartened and hopeful by what I see. But my point in telling you all of this is that adoptable cats show well and are thus rescued because they're the easy ones to adopt into homes by rescue groups and no-kill shelters. But what about the many cats who are left behind who are deemed, tagged, unadoptable? Well, what Anne discovered was that it's not that they're not adoptable. It's that they appear to be such because they're scared or because they are older or they just don't exhibit behaviors that would make people want to adopt them. But once you put these animals into homes through a foster system, they thrive. And so that's what Anne decided to do. She gave the cats, and she gives the cats languishing in the city shelter or those slated for euthanasia, a second chance by finding them foster homes and getting them adopted into permanent homes. Again, she's not just pulling out the ones that other organizations pull out and then adopts them. She's pulling out the ones who are going to be euthanized. She's pulling out the ones who other rescue groups have said, no, they're not cute enough. They're not friendly enough. They're not adoptable. We're not going to take those. This is what she's doing. She's pulling out these animals and getting them into foster homes so that they're in a comfortable, safe home environment out of cages, and then gets them adopted into permanent homes. Since their founding 5 years ago, just 5 years ago, they have helped over 1,100 cats, and that number is already increased by the time I'm recording this, reducing the euthanasia rate for cats in the Oakland shelter from 42% in 2011. I just wanted to say that number again, 42%. Almost half the cats who come into the shelter are euthanized, to 7%. Flip that around, you get when Cat Town started 5 years ago, the release rate for live cats, the live release rate for the Oakland City Shelter was 58%. Now it's 93%. Now, when I first heard about Cat Town, it was right after my beloved cat Schuster had died. And in his honor, I made a donation to them because I had heard about them and I was impressed by what I was seeing. And I recognized the name of the woman who started it. By the way, this all has to do with cat cafes, so stay with me. All of this has to do with cat cafes. It's very significant. So the woman who started at Anne Dunn, I knew her because not only was she responsible for catering my wedding, but she is also responsible for having shown me some of her moves in the kitchen, which helped lay the groundwork for the recipes I would later create in my subsequent cookbooks. So Anne Dunn just played a significant role in my world. And so many moons ago, I found her. My God, this was back in 1999. I think it was around 1999 or 2000. I threw a fundraiser for Farm Sanctuary. This is almost 16 years ago. And I asked Michael Greger, who was a friend and colleague at the time, still is, and if he would speak. So he was one of the speakers at our, we did a tea party. It was something called like City Tea for Country Critters or something like that. And we advertised it to the community and many of our community folks showed up. And I think through a colleague, friend, Michelle Simon, who I've talked about before on this podcast, she at the time had an organization called the Center for Informed Food Choices. I think I found out about this local catering company called Urban Kitchen from her. Their literature was on the table. They were a vegan catering company. And I remember their brochure. I remember what their brochures looked like. I remember the design. And at the time, David and I had just become engaged. And so we were looking for a caterer for our wedding. And we were going to hire like a Burmese restaurant who made food that we really loved. But when I found Urban Kitchen, I was like, yeah, like it's worth talking to a vegan catering company. 16 years ago, there was not a vegan catering company here in Oakland. Frankly, there's still not a dedicated vegan catering company in Oakland. We need one. Catering is hard. I know it's really hard. But it turned out that both Anne and her business partner at the time, Sasha Weiss, had both trained at Natural Gourmet in New York. I know Anne did. I think Sasha did. But they both worked at Millennium, the gourmet vegan restaurant in San Francisco, now in Oakland. And up until that time, they had worked at Millennium. Then they started Urban Kitchen. Sasha was the pastry chef. And in fact, it's his baking recipes that are featured in the Millennium cookbook. So their food was amazing and right up our alley. So that's who we decided to go with for our wedding. We hired them and everything was fantastic. And I've told you the menu before, but if you want to salivate, I can tell you, I'll tell you the menu at the very end. I want to get to our cafe discussion, but I'll tell you the menu for our wedding at the very end of this podcast. I think you'll be interested. You will salivate. So grab a tissue because you really will. It was fantastic. So Anne and I became friends and she's awesome. She, not only was she a vegan chef, I also discovered that she was a cat lover. And to boot, one of her cats, I'm having trouble thinking of the name of the other cat, but one of the cats, her cats at the time, was named Tea Cake. And Tea Cake was named for a character in one of my favorite novels, obviously one of her favorite novels as well, which is Their Eyes Were Watching God by Zora Neale Hurston. So she's pretty awesome. So fast forward to 2011, when Schuster died, and I heard that Anne had founded Cat Town. I wasn't surprised. I knew that she had stopped cooking and had moved to DC to focus on her formal training, which was in like policy around housing issues. But when I heard she was back in Oakland, having founded Cat Town, knowing what I knew about her compassion and about the feral cats that she had fed when she did live in Oakland, I wasn't surprised to hear that she had founded Cat Town. But it wasn't until she was raising funds along with her partner in kitty care for a cat cafe that I had the pleasure of seeing her again for the first time in several years. So that's the first time I had heard about the cat cafe they were opening. And I had heard that the cat cafe they were opening was going to be the first cat cafe in the United States, which really didn't mean much to me because I had never heard of cat cafes. But when I started poking around and researching and learning more, I found out that the first cat cafe started in Asia. In Taiwan in particular. Now, apparently, according to Wikipedia, the world's first cat cafe, Cat Flower Garden, opened in Taipei, Taiwan in 1998. And it became a huge tourist destination. But the idea of cat cafes really took off in Japan. And the first cat cafe opened in Japan in Osaka in 2004. Tokyo's first cat cafe opened in 2005. After this, the popularity of cat cafes boomed. In Japan. From 2005 to 2010, 79 cat cafes opened across the country, and I'm sure there's more by now. The entire concept became so trendy that rabbit cafes have also become common in Japan, and one cafe in Tokyo has added goats. The mere novelty of this stretches to the fact that some of the cat cafes in Japan feature just specific types of cats. Like one has just black cats, one has fat cats, which is scary because what do they do to keep them fat? One features rare breeds, again, raises the question for me to meet their mission of rare breeds. Where are they getting these rare breeds and what kind of responsibility is being taken for responsible breeding, if you believe there's such a thing? Now, cat cafes took off in Japan because the country is so small and because it's so densely populated. So people live in apartments that are small and companion animals are not always allowed in these apartments. And cat cafes give people a chance for some kitty companionship. Sounds like a lovely concept in theory, but how does it play out practically? And for me, it raises many more questions than the couple I just asked. Namely, what's in it for the cats? Where do the cats come from? Who takes care of their needs? Who takes care of their vet bills? Is someone going to bring them to the vet who might otherwise not bring them if it's going to be too expensive and it's going to cut into the profits of the cafe? I mean, these are all considerations when you're talking about a for-profit business. What about when the cats are sick? I mean, who's watching them closely enough to make sure that they're not sick? Cats, a lot of animals, I mean, cats in particular, you can't always tell if they're sick. You have to be watching really closely or just distressed. Who's watching to make sure that they're not stressed out or distressed? They exhibit very subtle signs, cats do, when they're sick. And if you're not paying attention, you might not notice something. What about cats who need a special diet or who need to lose weight? What about cats who stress out in a group setting with shared food? What about when they're old? Really, what is happening to the cats when they're old? Are we just bringing them back to shelters? Or are they euthanized? Or are they taking care of their whole life? What about it when they, if they have diabetes? Like, is someone going to give them insulin? I mean, there's all these little considerations, it seems to me. What about when they're not as cute or playful when they're older? Not, of course, they're still cute. Of course, I don't mean that they're not cute. I mean, if someone considers them not cute or playful enough to consider them one of the cat cafe cats, what happens then? What about cats who don't do well with other cats? What about cats who don't do well with people? What about cats who don't do well in a public space? Now, many of the cat cafes talk about the fact that they make sure all of these considerations are given and they do ask these questions. I'll just continue with other questions I have to make sure they are being asked. And this is something you can bring to cat cafes that you are aware of. Many cats are just not well suited to living with many other cats. And to make it work, new cats have to be introduced very slowly. If you don't know what it's like to introduce one cat to another, it's not like with dogs. You can be like, hi, how are you? Here, there's another dog. And everybody just plays or sniffs each other's butts and then that's it. Cats is very specific. There are a lot of problems that happen when you keep cats in large groups or if they're just stressed because there's a different cat in their space. They become aggressive. They can spray, urine spraying, bullying. These are all issues that increase with the number of cats in a space. And if new cats come in, like if there is a whole adoption rotation, which some of these cat cafes say they are doing is adoption. If you have cats going out and new cats coming in, that impacts the stability of the relationships of the cats left behind. I'm going to tell you something right now. I'll tell you a little secret. There's one reason I have only two cats is because I'm really afraid of what would happen if I brought a third cat in. And I say afraid because it literally changes their chemistry. It really messes with them. And it happens. People have three cats. I know people have four or five cats, like very responsibly. And it can be done. I'm not saying that anybody who has more than two, it's not good for them. But I'm afraid of what would happen because they're so sensitive. And so you have to be really, really cautious about, you know, the dynamics and the chemistry and all the changes that take place in cats when you bring new ones in and others leave. Stress and illness are very closely linked in cats. One study even shows that changes in daily routine and even caretakers were enough to trigger sickness, such as vomiting and avoiding the litter box in otherwise healthy cats. Simon and Schuster both got blocked. They got crystals in their bladder, which means they couldn't urinate, which of course is fatal if you don't catch it. When I brought in a foster kitty, a little kitten from a shelter I was volunteering at, that's how sensitive cats are. So for those who know what it's like to introduce a new kitty to an existing one, it is quite the ordeal. First, you want to let them smell each other through the door, then they can smell each other underneath and they can kind of play with the paws under the door. And then you can like give them short stints together to get to know each other. I mean, this is a long process. Is that kind of process taking place in these cafes? What about safety? Many shelters experience some level of theft. I mean, it doesn't happen all the time, but when I volunteered at the county shelter back in New Jersey, kittens and pit bulls were often at risk of being stolen for fighting and for bait. What about doors? I mean, I don't know how many times I have had to remind regular visitors at our house to keep the doors closed. People are not mindful of this who are not cat people, who don't live with cats. Some kitties are clever enough to open the door themselves. What happens then? I mean, it just puts them at risk in terms of safety. Are there systems in place to make sure that doesn't happen? Others wait to run out as soon as the door opens. What about kids? How will they interact with the cats? What about litter boxes? Every cat guardian, like me, knows the lengths we go to find just the right litter box, the right size. Is it covered? Is it not covered? What type of litter? Is it in the right spot? How many cats are, you know, using it? How many cats per litter box? I will give you an idea of the kind of care I take when considering the comfort and happiness and emotional well-being of my cats. I have two cats. I have two litter boxes. Like, we have two huge litter boxes. They're covered for two cats. For two cats. Some of these cafes have 10, 15, 20 cats. Some have six. How many litter boxes are there? How many are there per cat, right? How often are they being cleaned? Something else. Cats get so fussy about their litter boxes. If their litter boxes aren't clean, they're going to be pooping and, you know, peeing outside of their litter box. How can you tell if someone has gastrointestinal stress? Like a lot of cats, one of the ways that we as cat guardians can tell if something's wrong with them, I can discern from their poop. We all can. Anybody who has cats, dogs, rabbits, right? One of the ways you can tell there's something wrong is from their poop. The regularity of it or their, you know, the texture of it, the hardness of it, the softness of it, if it's diarrhea. I mean, these are all things to consider. Now, I have two cats. It's pretty easy for me to tell who's doing what for the most part. And some of that is because I know their habits so well. I know that Michiko never buries her poop. She's such a princess. She just wants to get into the litter box, make her poop, and then she leaves. She never buries her poop. Charlie is a champ. He buries his poop. But I know if I see poop sitting on top of the litter, that's Michiko. So like I could tell like if that was soft or if it was diarrhea, I would know if something was wrong because I know whose poop is what. To be really frank, because obviously we've moved to poop, so we're being frank. But who's watching out for that when you have like a lot of cats? It's not to say these things can't be done. It's just to say, are these all considerations when you have a cat cafe? What about how to pet the cats? Are people taught how to pet the cats? Are people taught how to tell if a cat is unhappy or doesn't like to be picked up or likes to be picked up? It's one thing to meet a kitty in a bookstore, which always makes me very happy. I see a little kitty, give him a little tummy rub, a little head pat. And I, you know, kind of as a cat person, I will call myself a cat person. I am a many animal person, but I am a cat person. I have a good instinct about where to touch a cat to make sure I know that they're not going to either scratch me or that I'm not going to, you know, upset them. And there's certain places on a cat you kind of have to know, but that's because I'm aware of them, but not everybody is. And I'm also aware that they're not there for me, so I'm not going to like pick them up and, you know, cause them distress. But at a cafe, when people are there for the express purpose of interacting with cats, when they've paid money to do so, what then? What comes first, the cat's needs or the desires of the person who wants to get what they paid for? Cats prefer to call the shots when it comes to interactions with humans. They need the ability to get away from human interaction if they want to, even if that means disappointing customers or limiting the number of human visitors at one time. I can't tell you how many times I have had to explain to people who meet my cats for the first time how to touch them, how the cats like to be touched. Charlie doesn't like to be stroked. He doesn't like to be touched too much. He doesn't like to be touched on his back at all. He doesn't like to be touched by his tail. He doesn't like his stomach touched. He really hates it. but he loves to be scratched under his chin. He loves to be scratched on his head. And he doesn't like to be picked up at all. Michiko loves belly rubs, but she doesn't like her toes being touched, and she doesn't like to be picked up. I can pick her up. I can pick up both of my babies, but they don't like to be picked up by people who just come in the room. They pick them up, they scratch their back, you know, or they stroke them too much. And like, especially Charlie, he'll kind of go at you if you stroke him too much on his, like in one spot by his back. You know, dogs wag their tails when they're happy. Cats are the opposite. Cats wag their tails when they're really not happy, when they're just kind of annoyed and they're just frustrated. Like, so when people see cats wagging their tails, sometimes they think, oh, they're happy. I'm like, no, it means take your hand away now because they're going to scratch you or bite you. That's what it means. And some people don't know the signals. Now, of course, people can be taught these signals, and I think that's absolutely possible. But these are the kinds of considerations that every public cafe, if you're going to have a cafe that features cats, these are the kind of things you have to consider. And I realize these are a lot of questions I'm raising, but these are the kinds of things that come up for me when I think about cat cafes. Now, it's true that there's the novelty aspect of it, which makes me uncomfortable because the shtick, in my opinion, will always outweigh the welfare of the cats, I think. As I always say, it's our intentions behind our decisions that determine outcome. And if the intention behind a cafe is to make money on a novel idea, then that's going to be the first consideration, not the cats. As I said before, when you're weighing profit and loss, and you're looking where you can cut costs, you're going to tell me that you're going to take a cat to the vet every time he exhibits or she exhibits some behavior, or, you know, that just doesn't happen. I mean, people who really have to worry about these things have difficulty deciding to do that. I mean, I have a really hard time believing that every cafe is going to take them to the vet every time they need help. That's going to be a cost to the cafe because these are for-profit businesses. The popularity of cat cafes is a little ridiculous. I imagine it's going to wane at some point. But after Taiwan and Japan, they began spreading all over Asia, including in Thailand and Singapore, where they were investigated. There was a cat cafe in Singapore that was investigated in 2014 after many cats, I think it was about 10 cats, mysteriously died. Visitors and staff talked about how traumatizing the whole experience was for the cats there. And of course, the owner denies it. And the cafe, as of this writing, is still open. Moving out of Asia, cat cafes started opening in continental Europe starting in about 2012 in Vienna, Austria, in Brussels, in Belgium, in Copenhagen, Denmark, in Estonia, in Finland, France, Germany, Italy, Lithuania, the Netherlands, Poland, and Russia. And some of them are saying they're doing it for the cats. Some of them seek to raise awareness about cat issues, homeless issues, overpopulation, stray cats, feral, abandoned cats. Some of them tout the fact that the cats they have in the cafe were rescued from local shelters and rescue groups. And I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that at all. And in fact, what I saw at the cat cafe in Munich did not make me uncomfortable at all. Truth be told, I think I was more uncomfortable for the people who were a little ridiculous when they saw a cat. At like one point, the cafe staff brought out some treats, and of course, all the cats came running to the center of the cafe, which you could argue was a bit of a showpiece moment. And people were flipping out, like grabbing their cameras and acting like they had never seen cats before, me included. I was one of those people. What can I say? I was jonesing for some kitty love, having been away from my cats, and I just like cats. Like, I really get it. I get what it means to have these places. I get why people get excited about places like these. I kind of get ridiculously excited if there's a cat in a bookshop or a garden center or wherever on the street. Like, I love interacting with them, and I live with cats, and I still love interacting with, you know, new cats that I see. So we were excited to be there, and everything I saw at the Munich Cafe, the Katzentempel, said to me that the six cats who lived there were very well loved, very well cared for, very comfortable with each other, very comfortable with people, I wasn't remotely concerned. They were very happy. And after eating the little treats, each found their little respective places wherever they wanted. Some went high, some went low, some left the room. They started grooming or they fell asleep. Nothing told me that these cats were unhappy or not well cared for. And I do believe that they were there as resident cats in the cafe to be cared for the rest of their lives. I do believe that. The other thing that made me happy about this place was that they had animal rights issue literature and vegan literature all over the cafe, and they were a vegan cafe. So I appreciated the consistency they had as well. So do I think it could be done well? Sure, I think it can be done well. And I think there's a range of how it can be done, but it's still a shtick. There's no denying that. But what about cafes who say they're in it just for the cats? Like at Katzentempel, they rescued those six cats. Those six cats now have a home. I believe that they're there for the rest of their lives. I believe that. And I do believe they're going to be well cared for. Okay, that was six cats who were rescued. That's awesome. But what about cafes who say they're doing it for cats to help them get adopted, who take the cats from shelters and then, like, you know, they want to give them a forever home, who work with rescue groups to do this? What about that? And some of these cafes are also saying, I want to raise awareness about cat issues. And, you know, are they doing that? Now, there seem to be a few places like this popping up more and more in the United Kingdom. Of course, there's also cat cafe opening in New Zealand. There's cat cafes in Canada. So I see more and more places opening up that are saying they want to do it for the animals, for the cats. Japan, there's one in particular that says they're doing it for the cats, who say they're putting into place a model to raise awareness about homeless cats and who also make it possible for people to adopt, like by working with rescue groups. But where I'm seeing this most is in the United States. And so before I get to the United States, I want to thank everyone who makes this podcast possible. If you can all just give everybody like a woo woo, like thank you, everybody supporting this podcast. All of you listening, you're listening because someone else is supporting this podcast. If you're listening and you support this podcast, thank you. If you're listening and you're not supporting this podcast, give a woo woo to like people who are supporting the podcast, because there's people who are doing that to make this possible. So thanks to everybody, and thanks everybody who's listening. Thank you to all of our regular ongoing Platinum supporters, Tim Anderson, Jennifer Ellis, and Ben Ellis, and Paige Atchison. And I realize there are Platinum supporters that I have not been thanking. So thank you to Sylvie Raquel, Valentina Zenkel, Ulrich, Amanda Kless, Renee Marinkovich, David Cabrera, and Alexandra Gray. You are all amazing, and thank you at every level to everybody who's supporting at every level. Yay to all of you. Every penny of the contribution you make goes to the work that I do. Like, just every single penny goes to this podcast, the daily Periscope videos. And now I'm doing Facebook live broadcast videos, which is pretty exciting. The daily dose of compassion emails, the YouTube videos I make, just everything I do. I don't get paid for any of it except for what you provide and support. Everything I just named, it's because of you. So thank you for helping me to do this work that changes hearts and minds. And please become a patron today at ColleenPatrickGaudreau.com or really just patreon.com/ColleenPatrickGaudreau. Thank you to everybody who's making it possible. Cat cafes in the United States seem to differ from those in many other countries by focusing on adoption, but only one out of the dozens of cat cafes in the United States, only one is a nonprofit. One. And coming full circle, that's Cat Town's Cat Cafe. What I think is more significant than the fact that they were the first cat cafe to open in the United States is that they're the only nonprofit cat rescue who opened the cafe solely as a means to their larger end, to get cats out of the shelter and into homes. The only intention for Cat Town in opening the cafe was to make it an adoption center. It was never anything else. So again, I think most people opening cat cafes in the U.S. to adopt the cats out have good intentions, but not being rescue organizations themselves with their own criteria and knowledge of cats and cat needs, I just think it's inevitable that mistakes will be made and the cats will suffer for it. I think you need to own your own mission as a rescue organization in order to better prioritize the needs of the cats. For instance, I heard about difficulties some cafes had because they were having a conflict with the rescue organizations they wanted to partner with. Because of that very reason, they treated the adoption piece as an inconvenience. So everybody knows there's enough to worry about when you're running a business, when you're running a cafe, when you're in food service, when you're training staff, when you're trying to have good customer service. How can you do all of that and appropriately and effectively manage the needs of the cats? With Cat Town, that's number one. If the cafe part ever got in the way of the adoption part, it would be a no-brainer. The adoption piece, the cats would come first. Like, that's just the way it is because this is part of their larger mission. Using the cafe as part of their larger mission is what it's all about. In fact, the name is actually Cat Town Cafe and Adoption. That's the name of it. It's not Cat Cafe. It's not a cute little cutesy name. It's Cat Town because that's the name of the organization who actually runs it. Cat Town Cafe and Adoption. The bottom line is that when the city shelter is full, cats will be euthanized. That's the bottom line. So the cafe creates all this capacity to relieve pressure from the shelter by keeping the cages empty. When I had dinner with Anne a couple weeks ago, we talked about all of this, and she told me her rescue philosophy, which I love. I love her rescue philosophy, and I think we can apply this, and I think we do apply this in my quote, don't do nothing because you can't do everything, do something, anything. Well, along those lines, her rescue philosophy is better. She said, of course, she'd love for the cats they pull from the shelter to go straight to a home, but that doesn't happen. So they're all about removing the obstacles to people who are already willing to help while creating a positive environment for the cats while they're waiting for a home, right? It's better for the cats to be at the cafe where they can move about freely and get tons of attention and exposure to potential adopters than it is to be sitting in a cage. Better is better. And then, of course, better than that is living in a home, but better is better. As I said in the beginning, I think what most people don't understand is that most rescue groups only help the cream of the crop, the cutest, the youngest, the most adoptable cats, leaving the harder to place cats behind, knowing they will be euthanized and then blaming the shelter for killing them. Yes, a no-kill model is a model to be proud of, but one of the reasons some organizations and rescue groups can call themselves no-kill is because they're not dealing with the really hard aspects of homeless, abandoned, abused, and neglected animals. The city shelters cleaning up the society's problems. I mean, they're dealing with the society's problems. And, you know, I've talked about this in my Critters on the Street episodes. We're all responsible for the animals in our society, in my opinion. We're all responsible for them, but we're not taking responsibility. And so the shelter is the one that's taking the responsibility. And then, you know, they're demonized because they're a kill shelter, which, you know, it's awful. It's all awful. It shouldn't be like that. But the mainstream rescue community, the SPCAs, the Humane Societies, they can take the most adoptable cats and then market themselves as no kill and, you know that the ones they're leaving behind, the quote unquote unadoptable ones, are killed. But they can market themselves as no kill. Cat Town's primary focus is saving cats who no other groups will take, those who are deemed unadoptable. And they use the cafe to get very shy and under-socialized cats exposed to potential adopters while changing the trajectory of their lives by also giving them access to confident cats who serve as role models. The shyer cats see the more confident cats play and interact, and it helps them come out of their shell. They wouldn't have those other cats to model if they were just all sitting in isolated cages. And this whole thing is like a self-fulfilling prophecy. They don't get socialized. They're deemed unadoptable. They're euthanized. But between the population of cats that Cat Town saves and their very close partnership with the municipal shelter, what they're doing is really, really quite radical. It's pretty amazing. And it's clearly working. Going back to those numbers I quoted in the beginning, when Cat Town started 5 years ago, the live release rate for cats at the Oakland animal shelter was 58%. It's now 93%. That means 93% of the cats who come in are going out of the shelter. And when you compare the numbers before and after the cafe opened in October 2014, you can look and see that if they hadn't opened that cafe, they would have ended 2014 at about the same number of adoptions as 2013. So the cafe is making all of the difference in getting cats out of the shelter and adopted quickly. But that's Cat Town. They are a nonprofit rescue organization that uses the cafe as a means to get cats out of the cages and into someone's home. The cafe exists 100% for the cats. And a quick glance at the reviews on Yelp is a quick way to know it's definitely for the cats. I mean, most people get it and they love the cafe. But some people complain that the cats are sleeping or not playing with them when they arrive. Yeah, that's because they're not there for you. They're there because Cat Town is there for them. That's really what it is, right? I mean, they're cats. First of all, they sleep like 16 hours a day, first of all. But like, that's what I'm concerned about with the cat cafes. And even this is, these are people who like come to Cat Town Cafe knowing that they're a nonprofit for, you know, to rescue the cats. And they still complain that the cats like don't play with them. That's what concerns me about the cat cafes that are in it for profit. The other thing I want to share with you about Cat Town is that it's about to become a vegan cafe. So this is the Cat Town Cafe. It's about to become a vegan cafe. I had heard that it wasn't vegan, but I didn't have the bandwidth to focus on seeing what I could do to help. This was a couple years ago. But last week or a couple weeks ago when I had dinner with Anne, we talked about a million things. I don't ask people. I didn't ask Anne if she's vegan. I just don't ask that question of people, mostly because people volunteer that information to me. But we had a lovely dinner in Encuentro, talked about a ton of things, hours and hours of just catching up. And when I emailed her with some questions about the cafe in researching for this podcast episode, I wrote, I just want to confirm so I have my facts straight for the episode. The cafe is not vegan. Is that correct? And her response made my day. Anne wrote back and said that she hasn't been comfortable with the fact that it's not a vegan cafe, but after having dinner with me, she decided that she's converting it to a 100% vegan cafe as quickly as possible. And I, of course, could not be more thrilled for everybody, for the cats, for everybody, for the animals, who the inconsistency of it. I'm so thrilled for them. I'm thrilled. And one of the things I loved about the Cat Cafe in Munich, of course, was that it was vegan. But of course, what I love about Cat Town Cafe is that it exists solely for the cats. And now that it will be vegan is just perfect. It's a perfect consistency. Help one animal while helping another animal. So Anne and I are going to work on the menu together, and I'm really thrilled to be able to help. So I just want to say this. I never asked Anne, I never said anything to her about being vegan, the cafe being vegan. I didn't judge her. I didn't say anything. I believe this is just, again, the power of just being who we are and being, you know, the vegan in the room. And we didn't talk about it at dinner. Like, that's what I was so surprised about when she said, yeah, but after having dinner last week with you, I decided we need to switch it to a vegan cafe right away. And I was like, okay, that's amazing. Like, it didn't come from me. It came from Anne. And that's beautiful. So the next time you come to the San Francisco Bay Area, or you know anyone who lives here and they want to support Cat Town, they can support them by just making a donation. They can support them by going in, because when you go in, you either pay a $10 non-refundable and tax deductible donation by making an appointment online, or you can do a walk-in and it's a $5 donation or a purchase from the cafe. And of course, all of it just goes right back to the cats. So come to Cat Town Cafe. They also have events like Cat Zone Yoga and Cat Zone Movie Nights, because there's a Cat Zone. I should say that there's a whole separate area where the cats are, separate from the actual food cafe. And so only a certain number of people can go into the Cat Zone at a time. So again, everything is mindful about the cats. Everything is about the cats. But they have events where you go into the Cat Zone and you watch a movie. How awesome is that? Or you do yoga. Love it. So I hope I've offered some food for thought. I think it's pretty clear that I'm saying that the number one priority for having a cat cafe has to be the cats. As of this writing, Cat Town Cafe is the only nonprofit cat cafe, but with more and more cat cafes touting their adoption model, my recommendation would be to do your own research, ask them questions, visit for yourself. I think it's really important to have firsthand experience with these kinds of things. I really believe in being a witness. So go be a witness. If the cafe is related to or connected to or affiliated with a shelter or rescue group, and they're using it as a way to increase adoptions, ask questions. Confirm that they're going through the normal adoption process and criteria when they're adopting these cats out to people. It has to be done that way. Like, you cannot have a cat cafe. I mean, then it becomes a pet store. So it has to be done in a way that you're, you know, you have criteria that the adopters meet. If the problem that cat cafes are trying to solve includes limitations on renting apartments to people who have companion animals, then find out what you can do to change that. I don't know that the answer is cat cafes. I think the answer might be making it easier for people to live with animals. More and more people are getting involved in what is considered a pet ownership discrimination. Do some research yourself and see if this is something you want to get involved in. There is so much to do. There's always work to do. There's always work to be done. And the animals really are just waiting for you to pick what works for you. You don't have to be perfect, but if you want to get involved, there are so many ways you can get involved. And if this is an issue you care about, then I really recommend that this is something you take a closer look at. So I hope that was helpful for you. I am going to go kiss my cats right now because as I'm recording this, Michiko, she's about to scratch her little scratchy post. Let's see if you can hear. Oh, she stopped. Are you self-conscious? Did you know I was about? No? And I just glanced over. Oh, here she goes. I don't know if you can hear that, but she just scratched her little, one of her many scratching posts because she's a cutie patootie. That's my kitty, and I'm really grateful I get to live with them, and I'm really grateful to organizations like Cat Town and everybody who's working on behalf of animals. For the animals, this is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. Thank you for listening.